Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chelsea Echo. Hopefully, you might be watching this because we've now got it all visual and sexy-ish and all that sort of good stuff. If you're not watching it and that's failed and you're listening to it again, we are trying to figure out a way to make this visual. That's what me and Dan do because we're geniuses, mainly Dan because he's got the StreamYard account. I just, you know, look pretty in this case and also because my computer decides to do an update and just not work and be horrible, be 25 minutes late. So I can only apologise to Dan for that. Dan, how are we? Was my timing as good as the cancellation of FM25 or, you know, was it, you know, could it get a bit better?
It could get slightly better. Are you a FM aficionado? Are you someone who's like really devastated by this news? Are you a bit like me? Like, I try and get into the game. I've enjoyed it sometimes, but has this really ruined my life? Probably not. It's ruined Win Stanley and Stuart's life more than it has ours, I'm pretty sure.
I have played FM once since FM 2008, and that was, I tried in lockdown with Benj. We tried to do like an Imperial Wharf series, and it backfired miserably because my computer couldn't handle it. I'm not really an FM guy. I was always more of a career mode guy, in fairness.
Yeah. I'm much more of a career mode guy. I'm into like my seventh or eighth year on the latest, I'm still going to call it FIFA, with AFC Wimbledon. Every now and then, when I start a new FIFA, I haven't done it this year, but usually to get into career mode and to kind of get used to it, and play the game, I do a Chelsea career mode.
Yeah.
But then I get bored very quickly because you end up winning very easily. So then I go back and take a League Two team. In recent years, it's been Forest Green, but I can't do that this year. So I've had to go with Wimbledon instead.
I always do a Chelsea to settle in. Although last year I did, basically I only got the new FIFA in January. So I was playing it up until December. I got sacked for the first time ever in my FIFA career mode. No, this thing, right?
That takes some doing. That really does take some doing.
Let me lay this out though. This is why I was like, what the hell? This makes no sense, right? So I'd hit the point where it was literally just pretty much all regens. So you had to try and figure out who was who and how to do it sort of thing. But my squad was still so good. We were winning the league pretty much every single year. We'd won the league and the Champions League, and then they sacked me.
Yeah, the best one I did was FIFA 20, and that was also during lockdown. This was a Wimbledon career mode. Obviously, it took a few years to get, obviously, to the Premier League. But once I'd got to the Premier League, I got Wimbledon so good that I was like winning 7, 8, or 9 Champions Leagues in a row. It was insane, and then I just got bored.
But I just got tired of it, and I was a bit like, okay, we'll move on now. But I started a new career mode a couple of days ago, and I've made Cesc the manager of Chelsea, but then I might have to knock that on the head purely because I've just seen that Mourinho is back in the game. So I might have to just, you know, do a special one part three. I haven't decided yet, but we'll see what happens with that. But enough talk about fiction, okay? Let's talk about the realities of Chelsea Football Club, because as much as me and Dan would like to sit here and say that we could win league titles, we're amazing, we know the standards of the club, unfortunately, it seems, given the transfer window, Lawrence Stewart, Paul Winstanley and Ben Agbali do not. So we'll do a little 5 minutes. 5 minutes, Dan, that's it. Recap of the transfer window. And then obviously, we have to talk about the ticket stuff before we move into the preview. But let's talk about the transfer window. Rating first out of 5. I'll accept decimals.
A 2? See, I like 10. I think 5 is too, it's too small. Like, it's too,
fine.
I don't think you really, see, like a 1 has a real impact if it's out of 10.
Yeah.
Because then you're like, yeah, okay, you are really bad. Whilst like, if you do a 1 out of 5, you're like, well,
that's 2 out of 10.
In another system could still be actually average. Yeah, it's like, you know, no, I the transfer window, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
How could we improve? Let us send you our survey.
I could just put up now the, do you know the old David Moyes quote? It's like when he was Man United manager, we were outdone defensively in midfield and attack. We lost all the duels, but other than that, we had a really good game.
It's like when Frank does the whole scored one lucky goal, followed by a second lucky goal. Honestly, I mean, I think it was summarised pretty perfectly by the the statement that came out was I think it was a Telegraph, when they were talking about how Chelsea's new structure is, we're bringing in younger players and lowering the wage structure because it means that these players will still be attractive to sell to other clubs. Like, so you're basically admitting that you don't want to win anything anymore. Like, that's pretty much it now. Like, you don't want to make the big investments in players that could instantaneously make an impact on the squad. Like, that's what I don't get. This whole, we understand the club, we know it's about winning, but there's changes that need to be made. I get that there were changes that need to be made, don't get me wrong, but this whole thought process of young, constantly younger players, we're going to go sign this lad for 12 and a half million on deadline day, who has minimal senior appearances, when you've got Leslie Ogechukwu out on loan, you've got Andre Santos out on loan, you've got players which you could bring back and have an instant impact and be part of the depth in the squad. But instead, we signed another young player who undoubtedly we're going to loan out again. And I understand a few people were more excited about this guy. Don't get me wrong, like, I hope he does really well, I hope he's fantastic. But just being real, I'm watching this and I'm going, what the hell? Like, this is ridiculous. It's, again, another example where Chelsea have failed to really push the boundaries. And they're talking about, oh, well, we'll go get somebody in the summer. In the summer, there is a potential right now that Chelsea won't have Champions League football. So it'll be another season where Chelsea become less attractive to players to join. And the sporting directors can single-handedly destroy any credibility the club has. And I'm not just talking Chelsea, I'm talking every single club in world football could have this problem, where the sporting directors, who are the people that are in charge of bringing these players, attracting this talent for the coach to work with, to allow him to develop, to allow the team to develop, are failing in doing their jobs correctly.
I don't really know what else there is to say about the transfer window, because I think even before deadline day, we sort of already made the assessment and nothing really happened on deadline day that changed our perception, did it? João Félix leaving, is that the end of the world? No. Axel Disasi going to Aston Villa, is that the end of the world? No. Chilwell, I'm happy for him that he's going to get some football and hopefully can remain fit for the rest of the season. I think he's probably in a system that suits him, playing as a wing back. We've gone through this thousands of times, and it was quite no notable since the deadline day how they've kind of just, you know, almost mask off in a way. Like, as you said, and I think you just referenced, the most damning indictment is any concerns about the first team squad, any concerns about the failings of signings in recent windows. Like, no, it's all about, you know, selling them on and making them, you know, very attractive to make a profit on in the future. So I think they're kind of just telling you out loud, you know, what the plan is, really. And I think a lot of people have kind of come to that sad realization over the past month.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. And it also obviously meant that with the whole civil war that was occurring, where Bernard Agbali and Todd Bowley are currently fighting quietly in the background over who's going to be taking ownership of Chelsea long term, by the looks of things, because they're both trying to buy each other out, there was something a little bit stinky about the Todd Bowley situation, where it was obviously discovered that he owns a company which sells tickets on for higher value. Now, for the people that don't know, there was a protest outside Stamford Bridge before the game at the beginning of the week. There were obviously fans talking about the ticket prices, how they're struggling to get tickets. And it has since been revealed that this is apparently because they're saying Todd Bowley, but obviously this is a problem across the entirety of the Premier League, if we're going to be very honest, because it's not just Chelsea tickets on sale, but is, of course, Todd Bowley's company, so he is going to come under flak. They're selling tickets for thousands of dollars. So obviously the face value of a ticket on a Premier League match day is between 45 and 57 quid, really, depending on how you get it. If you sit in the Matthew Harden, obviously it's more expensive if you sit in the posh seats. You're seeing tickets in the West Stand and the East Stand going for thousands of pounds, tens of thousands. I believe there was one which was a six-figure sum for a game to watch Chelsea. I'm not going to sit here and say that it is a completely fine and legitimate case, because that is an issue, and ticket pricing and finding the right balance between macro and micro markets. Macro markets being the global fan base and the micro market being the people that go every single week is very difficult. And we're not here to sort of start a whole debate of international versus, you know, match going fans, because that's a really boring and tedious conversation which only results in people getting annoyed, rather than trying to sit down and figure out a middle ground where everyone can discuss and see which way to go, which obviously, you know, what we're about. We want to have discussions. We don't want to be having people yell at each other in comment sections and on Twitter. That's not what we do. So with that being said, Dan, I mean, how do you feel about the situation? And for you, does it also feel a little bit maybe that there's some dark arts going on there from a different PR team that isn't Chelsea spin team?
Maybe, like, you can't rule that out, unfortunately, not just in the current media landscape we live in, but we know that briefing has become one of the biggest traits of the current Chelsea era. So I wouldn't rule it out being a factor in why this news has come out at a time when public sentiment is really turning against the hierarchy at Chelsea again. However, Todd Bowley was involved in this before the public sentiment of when Stanley and Stuart and Igbali started to rile up. He should have known and had the foresight that, you know, he's responsible at the end of the day. Like, I think that you have to be able to hold multiple things at the same time. He holds responsibility for being a co-owner of Chelsea Football Club. He holds responsibility for someone who has an ownership in this site, and also an ownership in a Premier League club where your name has already been linked heavily to Chelsea. A lot of people, you know, it's just notable that in the vernacular, in the way people talk about Chelsea, you still have people who ask about Todd Bowley as like Roman Abramovich, because a lot of the outside perception is Bowley is Abramovich. Like, I assume there's a lot of outsiders, even people who, it frustrates me, like people in the media should know a lot better and people on TV should know a lot better. Like, I have no, you know, if you're covering Chelsea Football Club, if you're being paid a lot of money, you should know that Todd Bowley isn't running things. But anyway, there'll still be people on TV who regurgitate the myth that Todd Bowley is the leading figure. So with that, Bowley should know that his name comes with some weight and a link to Chelsea and how this would have been viewed. And at a time when so many things are coming together now to make fans feel detached across the game, but especially this ticketing problem, I don't think that us criticizing Bowley, having alarm over this growing problem, there were people highlighted in the West Ham away end, because, you know, that protest pre-game, it's notable to mention it wasn't just Chelsea fans. It was a mixture of Chelsea and West Ham fans from different supporter groups, who some of whom I spoke to before the game, had come together to make that demonstration, which proves that it's a broader issue than just Chelsea Football Club. But unfortunately, with Bowley's name, it's going to become a bigger thing. Whether this story broke through malicious or kind of like devious ulterior motive ways, it's still accurate.
Yeah.
Bowley is still linked to this site and he deserves criticism and scrutiny for it. And he holds the can basically for being involved in a site that are doing things that is going to look not only terrible on him, a contradiction and hypocrisy for the club, the way they condemn the basically ticket touting, and how it would be viewed by the wider Premier League. So I don't have much sympathy, and I don't think it's just because Bowley in the current time is viewed maybe more favourably by people. That doesn't mean you just you ignore this because it's convenient towards another argument. This is a major problem, and it's a major problem because it impacts more than just Chelsea. It impacts a majority of Premier League fans currently. I was reading also a piece from The Telegraph that it's not just football, it's just sporting events in general, how much more expensive they're becoming and how difficult it is for younger generations or just average people, you know, in the current climate to be able to go to major sporting events. So he holds the can for it. He deserves a criticism. I think the supporters trust. I definitely just go and read their statement. You know, I'm an affiliate member of the supporters trust, and you know, I think that their statement was pretty accurate. You know, they're not people who have been shy. And you know, again, I just hate that. I see it with the CPO all the time. I see it with the CST. People act like these are just like like a House of Lords, like kind of cultish type thing, where it's just some random people sat in a room just deviously coming up with stuff about Chelsea to block Chelsea's progress as like people, strange people online try and make out. No, like, I'm a member of the Supporters Trust. You could be a member of the Supporters Trust. They survey their members on these specific issues. And then once they do that and people give their responses, the CST then democratically follow out what their members have told them. So when you see a statement like that, it's coming and reflecting the mood of their membership as well, which are Chelsea fans across the world, not just in West London. So they, I think their contempt for it is spot on, and I don't think it's a smart play to turn around and go, well, this doesn't matter, because it absolutely does matter.
Yeah, and for people that actually maybe want to listen a bit further in terms of the Chelsea Supporters Trust and what they do, about 6 months ago, was it, Dan? We did a Chelsea town hall with the sideline where we actually sat down and spoke to the Chelsea Supporters Trust. So, as you know, it's about a year ago now. I was in Italy. It was before we played Man United, so April. Head across to our feed. It's all on there. Or you can find it on the Blueprint feed as well, on all good podcasting platforms. So you can listen back to that. And we highly recommend it if you want to educate yourself further and understand more, who the Supporters Trust is and what they do. It's really important, because this ticketing issue is, it's bad. I personally, if I have a ticket, I give it to somebody, it's never above face value, ever. If someone tries to sell me a ticket above face value, I'd tell them where to go, because realistically, it's, if you're trying to profit off of somebody going to the football, look, it's your prerogative. I completely understand it. But at the same time, you shouldn't be doing that if it's another fan. If it's a fan of the same team, if it's somebody who just wants to go watch the football, you shouldn't be profiting over somebody else's misfortune, which is completely something which I stand by. I think that I don't really strongly believe in the whole, when somebody says, for example, we're all Chelsea fans, right? And you're having an argument with somebody who don't get on with somebody. They could still be a Chelsea fan and be a bellend, right? That's a fact. That is a case, right? That whole thing I don't stand by and I don't agree with it. But if you are a fan of the same team and somebody wants a spare ticket and you've got the spare ticket, that is one of the only instances I do agree with that, where it's like, look, we support the same team. If I can't go or someone else can't go, you should enjoy it and go enjoy it for the same price that I'm enjoying it at. That's what I think it should be.
Well, it's like the ticket exchange has been decent. I know people personally who've used it who, it hasn't been an awful system. It's pretty easy to put your tickets up there, especially if you're like a season ticket holder. As you said, you've got an instance where you don't, family members or friends can't take up the ticket for whatever reason, and you're able to get money back for the game you're not going to, and people have been able to do that pretty easily. I think the issue that stemmed from the start of this season has been how easy it is for people literally living across the world to buy tickets for games very easily, which ties into this issue. And just generally as well, like, people have ticketing is a whole podcast in itself, right? Because as people have pointed out with recent allocations for this specific game we're about to talk about, where tickets for an FA Cup away game, which usually you think might be a little bit easier because you get a bigger allocation, they were sold out very quickly. And then you learn that people who've barely ever been to a game are suddenly able to get to it, and that's not like me saying trying to gatekeep, but the issue, there clearly is an issue, especially if we talk about these tickets going online elsewhere and people being able to access tickets very easily, and how that has become feasible, how that has become a consistent thing. It shouldn't be allowed to be accepted. And if we talk about accessibility to tickets, yes, I do firmly believe that, like, on a broader thing, you're never going to find a system at a club as big as Chelsea that makes everyone happy. It's never going to, you're never going to find a utopian system. It's just never going to happen, because you have competing interests, you have an increase in demand. Until Chelsea get a bigger stadium, there are always going to be people left out, especially at the Bridge, right? Like, so you have to accept that there, but that doesn't mean the system currently as it stands in whatever area you're talking about is good enough. And, it leads back to something we talk about, and I think we hold very important on this podcast, is hold the people who are actually responsible for these things accountable, not the people who aren't responsible for these things accountable. And in this case, Todd Bowley, however intricately, because I know he's involved in a lot of things, he's involved in A24 films, like, he's involved in things that maybe are less kind of detailed for him on a daily basis. You know, we see this with a lot of, you know, billionaires, right? Like they have their fingers in many pies, but that your name is still attached to it. And it's not just a random ticket site. It's a ticket site which directly links to games that, of a club you co-own.
Yeah.
And as the Telegraph report said, it could mean that Bowley is profiting off of something that his own club condemns, which obviously is an unmanageable and terrible situation if that is the case.
Well, I mean, we'll keep an eye on it. And absolutely, I do think we should do a pod on ticketing and I think that culture, I think it's really important. Dan and I will go away and think about that because I'd like to do that in a different style, Dan, rather than just you and I chatting. We should probably do that in a different way and make it interesting. But of course, we will move swiftly on now into the preview. And that, of course, is Brighton in the Cup. But before we head into that, ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right then, after a massive win over West Ham to return to the top four in the Premier League, eyes now turn to FA Cup action, where Chelsea take on Brighton and Hove Albion at the Amex on Saturday. And the fourth round of the FA Cup brings opportunity for Chelsea away from the Premier League, as well as acting as a practice run for the clash in the league against the same opponents at the same ground at the same time 6 days later. Chelsea's opponents this Saturday night and next Friday night are coming off the back of consecutive defeats to Everton at home and obviously a harrowing 7-0 thumping at Nottingham Forest last Saturday. The Seagulls do have recent draws against Arsenal and a win as well at Old Trafford, as always. Plus, they actually did win at Ipswich too, so their form is certainly not as bad as it may seem after their last two results. Chelsea have made it into the fourth round courtesy of a comfortable 5-0 win over Morecambe, while Brighton defeated Norwich 4-0. So this represents the first real test in this cup for both sides. In total, between the two sides, there have actually still only been 24 clashes. Chelsea have won 16 of them. There have been 5 draws, and Brighton have won only 3 of them. So Chelsea definitely in control of this fixture, and that also stands recently. Chelsea have won the last 4 competitive ties between the two sides, including a 4-2 win at Stamford Bridge in September in a thrilling match. Of course, Cole Palmer scoring all 4 Chelsea goals, including a stunning free kick, and Robert Sanchez doing his best to give Brighton a chance, being completely at fault, I would suggest, for both Brighton goals. Palmer was on the score sheet too the last time the sides played at the Amex, a 2-1 win last May, with Frenchman Christopher Nkunku also scoring that day, with a rare sight of his famous balloon last season due to serious run of injuries. On to the manager, and it could not be more brief, really. Maresca's solitary match against Brighton was the 4-2 win in September, and that is exactly the same for his opposing manager, Fabian Hertzler, who has only managed Chelsea once, and that was the 4-2 loss for Brighton at Stamford Bridge in September. So hopefully, after next week, we can be talking about Maresca being 3-0 against Brighton and Hertzler 0-3 against the Blues. Up the Chelsea. It's back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Dan.
Viva la numbers.
Viva los números. It's great. That's exactly what it needs to be. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Stat Shaggers. That was Tom Masters delivering you all the numbers that you needed ahead of the trip to Brighton. Probably the team I hate as much as Tottenham Hotspur. Maybe a little bit less. Don't know. They're like the annoying sibling.
We've been through this before on the show.
I'm not going to jump into it again. I don't need to. I'm
just because that one guy. Just because that one guy was it outside the bridge.
It's not just that one guy. It's not just that one guy. It is so many of them, just giving it large. Like even on such just yapping, yappa. Shut it, please. Your mouth was much like a rat. Okay, that's exactly what needs to be. We don't need it because also. They are shite this year, so it's really nice to see that. And when they're saying they should be sacking their manager, that does make me giggle just a little bit. I did enjoy it. But Dan, let's discuss this. Do we do it as the Echo 11, or do we change it up because it's the Cup, because of the magic of the Cup?
I don't feel very magical for this game. No, I don't either.
We're just crowds back on. It's pretty standard. So in goal, because Philip Jorgensen's taken his place, I guess it's Robert Sanchez for the cup. No, just Jorgensen.
No, it still has to be Philip Jorgensen.
How did you feel about him against West Ham? I thought he did all right. He didn't have to do much, but he was all right, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I said it in my show that like bare like any like just don't do anything disastrous would be an improvement. Like that's how low the bar is. That like just be an all right goalkeeper and you'll probably be deemed pretty good. It was quite funny that one of the loudest cheers on Monday was his name being read out by Lee Parker before kickoff. I still keep him in because I think this is an important game for Chelsea. I really do. I know we're going to have to do some rotation because there's certain areas of the squad that are a little bit drained at the moment. However, I don't think Enzo can afford to lose this game. Like maybe he could get away with like losing a cup game at Newcastle, for instance. Mm-hmm. Not only because the opposition's weaker, but I just feel in the current moment, Chelsea have to get ahead of steam. They have to start winning games consistently. They have to put wins on the board. If Chelsea were in a much stronger position, he could have maybe afforded to lose this. But, you know, it's a cup. People see it as a cup. We see the FA Cup, even though we haven't won it for a very long time. It feels like now people have an expectation that we can go far in this competition. So I don't think there'll be much sympathy if Chelsea don't get the job done. And Enzo puts out a really poor team.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that Chelsea need to really, really set a benchmark now. I think that performance against West Ham was, I think a draw would have been fair in hindsight. I think that, you know, they set up well and we struggled to break them down. But Brighton don't seem to play that way. Brighton are going to be a team which is very forthright. And Chelsea seem to thrive against teams which want to press as high as we do. So hopefully that we can get a result there and we can see what happens. But of course, that is Philip Jorgensen in goal. Moving on now, of course, we have the back four or the three with the inverted fullback with the fullback going bombing forward. Whatever it is, it's back four. Okay, keep it simple, keep it easy. So, are we going to see Muller Gusto or do you reckon Josh is getting an opportunity to start a right back?
I'd quite like to see Josh being given a start, actually. I'm a little bit conflicted because I actually think Malo Gusto was all right on Monday when he came off the bench. I wasn't that impressed by Reece James. I think Reece has looked a little bit off it. I don't think he's provided a level of performance that you expect from him, like before he gets injured again, and that's a shame. So I wouldn't be mad if Gusto starts. I really wouldn't. But I do think Josh deserves to start a game. And I think this is a good one to get him in the team and to play him in his preferred position, really. So, let's go. Let's make it fun and go with Josh. Because you've got no left back cover, you can rotate Marco Carrera if you want and put Gusto left back.
Which is what I was actually going to say. I think I'd like to see that. I think you want to see that rotation. Because if Cucurella gets injured, we're in trouble, given how the transfer window seems to be a case where Chelsea aren't going to sign left back. So we'll go Gusto left back. We'll go Josh at right back. Your two centre backs. Now, if this was me, considering we're going to be playing on Friday, so we've pretty much got 6 days, right? I would start the strongest pairing available with Jorgensen just as an opportunity for them to bond a little bit more. So I would go for Levi's not exactly been great, has he? But he's got to start to get better. So Levi and Tosin, I'd start. That's my strongest pairing, I think.
No, I'd start Tosin and Trev.
Yeah, Tosin and Trev, yeah.
Levi has been pretty poor for a while now and exemplified, obviously, by the error for the first goal, the Jared Bowen goal. But I just don't think one-on-one, I think he's been outdone a number of times. I think he hasn't been alert to some danger. And his passing, which is kind of a big part of his game, I think has really deteriorated and hasn't been that great for some time now. And I don't think it would hurt him to come out of the team here. Mm-hmm. And since Trev's returned, we look at that defence and it's Wolves, right? But like the best performance of a back two since Trev came back was Trev and Tosin against Wolves, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I'd start those two. I think Tosin's in better form and I think Trev's in better form. So that those are the two. And I think it then be on Levi to get his spot back. And I don't think it's wrong for him to want to like for him to be in a position to get his spot back. He shouldn't be undroppable. He hasn't been as exemplary as he was in the first few weeks of the season. I think he's dropped off, and I think it's time to rotate there.
Okay, we'll go with that then. I think that's a stable enough argument. I actually quite kind of agree with it. We should move on to midfield, though. And of course, that means that you've got an interesting conversation because Dan hates Kean and Drewsby Hall. I don't know why. I think he's a world-class player with lots of potential to grow into a massive talent at the age of 26 or 27 or whatever he is. But with that being said, we actually do have a quote from the presser from Enzo Maresca in regard to Romeo Lavia.
No, Romeo still is in the process to come back, but it's still a long way to go.
Dan, I'm gonna just rip this off like a plaster. He feels like he was a colossal waste of money at this point. I am getting quite bored of these continuous injury problems for Romeo Lavia.
He is still very, very young. Naturally, my instinct is to go, it'd be harsh to rule out him ever doing anything for Chelsea because he is just so ridiculously young. But when you spend the sort of money in central midfield that we did on Lavia and you're unable to use him for a majority of the season, and because that area isn't exactly stacked at all, I think the frustration is justified in some sense where you sort of go, we desperately needed midfield cover. We haven't got it. And the only good midfield cover, because I think it's a bit like the Reece situation, right? Like with a lot of these players that are injured, Reece, Fofana, Lavia, when they get injured, like when you've seen them actually play, you feel like they could be really, really big for the team. And talent-wise, I think we've seen potential of Lavia to be a really instrumental midfielder. But if he's not playing, it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter what that potential is. I always believe that, you know, I get very tired of theory chats around players. Like what's the actual tangible reality of them as a player? So I'm concerned that, yeah, we're in a situation already with a player that we've had with many others where we're just going to go through a cycle of them coming back, them getting re-injured, them coming back, them getting re-injured, and managers have to kind of really be cautious with them. And you kind of waste a lot of time maybe when brutally you could be focusing on another player who is going to be there 9 times out of 10. A name pops to mind who was there 10 times out of 10 last year, but we'll move swiftly on in central midfield. So this is the shame, right? You want to rotate, you want to keep bodies fresh because in some ways the team looks very drained. But instinct wise, I'm like Caicedo and Enzo. I have no other options currently. That is literally it. That's the only pair I have any faith are going to do a decent job in a high pressing game where I think Brighton, for their flaws defensively, will actually go at us. And you know, if your midfield isn't... The way we got round Brighton the first time was our midfielders... Your midfielders have to be on it. Because if they're not on it, it doesn't matter how much space is behind that defence of Brighton. They're going to win the ball high up and you're going to end up being countered and transitioned on yourself. Mm. So I just feel like Caicedo and Enzo are going to have to keep playing. And probably that's unworkable. That's impossible. Like at some point, Kean and Drewsby Hall is going to have to play games because that's the position we've put ourselves in because there's no more Cesare Cassidy. So yeah, it's just a bad situation. It's just a bad situation because Lavia, I can't see Lavia playing more than 5 more games this season. I'd be stunned if he's hitting more than 5 or 6 more appearances between now and May.
He's made, I think, on one hand, Chelsea appearances in 2 years. Like, I think the best ability is availability, as you stated earlier. And as much as he's a player who could maybe benefit the side, I don't think that Chelsea can rely on him at all. And there are too many players in the squad of that ilk, as you've alluded to earlier. So for me, I'm very much in a mindset of, you know, if the right offer come in, I'd cut my losses. I think that he's somebody who... I don't think Chelsea can benefit from right now. And guess what? Down the line, yeah, we might go to regret it. But at the time, it would make sense for that sale. And I think, as we said earlier, the whole thing for this squad is, aren't players supposed to be attractive to be sold? So, you know, that'd be a win in the books of the sporting directors, I believe. With that being said, though, yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be Caicedo and Enzo. I would have thought maybe Drewsby would get an opportunity, but he hasn't got a stable partner he can play with there. So yeah, I don't see any other option.
I wouldn't want Enzo and Dewsbury Hall. No. Just wouldn't. I can't countenance Enzo and Dewsbury Hall. That is a bad pairing, because Enzo has real flaws going the other way, and I think Dewsbury Hall saw against Savette, right? That partnership we saw against Savette right at the start of the year, and it's not like Savette or Barcelona, are they? And they cut through them very easily. So I don't think that's a good enough partnership. I could sort of deal with Dewsbury Hall and Caicedo, because I think Caicedo will do the work of everyone anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's the only other option it could be. But we'll go with Caicedo and Enzo. Cole Palmer in the 10 is a given. The wings, you and I are going to disagree again, I feel, about this. Pedro Neto has a start. I think we'll agree on that. It just depends which flank he starts on, because, again, I just think Chelsea's wingers right now are just, aside from Neto's appearance against West Ham, where I thought he actually played with a directness which actually really helped the side. Well, it definitely did. You know, he got the first goal. But I just don't see the quality in playing Madueke and Sancho together. And, I mean, the other option I would have had, we'll have to get a touch on at the centre-forward spot, of course. But, I mean, for me, I'd start Pedro Neto and Sancho. I think Sancho has that creative spark, which I think counteracts what Neto brings to the team, where Neto is pacey and direct. Sancho is more of that sort of, it almost like a, he's like a number 10 on the wing, isn't he, really? He hasn't got really, I don't think he burns people for pace, but he can find that little pass, that little spot. And I think that's what I'd want to see, personally. I just think Nonny Madueke, again, he's just, but well, I mean, look, it's 6-1 half dozen the other. I think both him and Sancho off the boil, I just prefer Jadon Sancho personally.
I'd throw, and because of the striker situation, which we're about to get to, I'd start Tyreek George in this game,
okay,
at left wing, and play Neto right wing. You, to me, there's no excuse, right? Bring up Tyreek George. I was not, like, listen, we've discussed Nonny before, right? I still think statistically it's hard. That was only Neto's second goal of the season, by the way. Second Premier League goal of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, Neto is still Neto. If Neto can be more consistent in front of goal, then that becomes a more serious conversation. He needs to start producing more than he has, undeniably. And he did make a substantial difference in that West Ham game. There's no denying it. And it's not, you know, this is not like a Joao Felix situation. I was a fan and liked what I saw from Neto before he signed for Chelsea. So yeah, I'm happy to start Neto, but I feel like you should be promoting Tyreek George. I think you should give him a start, because Sancho hasn't been offering much recently. Madueke has his frustrations, and I think that would give a kick up the arse to Nonny and to the more senior players to say, I'm going to use Tyreek George now, and I'm going to see if because we didn't sign there was talk all the winter window, right? Like, we're going to go out and sign a winger. We didn't. So you should promote internally from within. This is the time to do it, and to see if you can get another option in there who's going to offer something different. Because he has played Tyreek George before. This would be the highest profile start of Tyreek George's small and limited Chelsea senior career so far. But I personally would like to see it as a bit of a wild card in there and see how Tyreek George does. Because other than waiting till the Conference League again, which is still a little bit away in terms of games, when are we going to see Tyreek George get a start? So for me, I'd start him in this game.
Okay. I do you know what? I don't disagree. I think that wild card be good. I think the directness of him and Neto would actually benefit the team a lot, especially considering our options up front are going to be extremely limited. This is what Enzo Maresca had to say about that.
Mark, unfortunately, is a bad injury, and Nico is better.
Is Jackson fit for this weekend?
Could be. Also could be a risk. We'll see. But it's not, it doesn't look a long injury.
Here is long term.
Could be, yeah.
Can you tell us any more?
No, because we are still waiting, but it doesn't look short injury. It looks long injury. Exactly how long, I don't know.
Weeks?
Months? Yeah, no, probably weeks, month, yeah.
And Labia, any update? In terms of the injuries just described, and Jackson's not serious, are you confident you've got enough cover there?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We have, before last games, we have two strikers, Nico and Mark. Sometimes we adapt also Cristo there. But in case both they are out, we're going to find some different solution.
Mark Guay, potential long-term injury. I mean, having seen him do the splits against West Ham, I did kind of think that would be the case. Extremely unfortunate because I thought he actually looked pretty sharp when he came on. And obviously Nicholas Jackson hasn't really been performing as of late. That leaves Chelsea with one option, really, and that is Christopher Nkunku. It's almost like signing a striker in January might have been a good idea, guys, eh? How do you feel about Nkunku? Do you think he's going to deliver given the opportunity, or do you think he's very much just probably pretty much checked out?
I was really happy that he got at least decent minutes against West Ham, and he wasn't playing as a number nine. He was kind of playing off the left, but then naturally, as Nkunku does, he likes to drift inward and, you know, connect and try and link up, which has always been his game. So this is the time, really. I think they've got to use Nkunku now between here and May, like to see how good he is, to see how impactful he can be. And because Jackson isn't out of the game, but he's been so shattered for so long that I think it's just the right time to see someone else in that role. The big shame is that Guiu, as a more of a focal like front man, would have been a more suitable option for Enzo Maresca's system, but that's not what he can do now. And now he could be, and we know of Chelsea injuries, these things can stretch on for a long period of time. So God knows when we're going to see Guiu again. So now's the time to figure out how to get Nkunku in the team. The wide players, as we've just been speaking about, their distribution and their end product has gone down rapidly over the past month. So the argument that not getting Nkunku and finding a way to make Nkunku work as a second striker, as a number 10, as maybe shifting Palmer out a little bit wider, the argument for not doing that anymore is massively limited. Like, it doesn't have the same weight as it did in December when Chelsea was still banging teams 5-4. And you could argue that look, the attack's working well. It's just an unfortunate situation with Nkunku. It's no longer that situation. So I feel like now's the time any serious head coach tries to find a way to make Nkunku work, because I think he's that talented a footballer. And if you give him, this is always what I've said about many players at Chelsea, until we see a substantial serious run in the first team, you can't make a serious judgment on them. And I feel like Nkunku is worthy of that chance. And once we see that chance, we can make a firmer judgment on him as a player for Chelsea.
Yeah, I think it's really important for Nkunku to get that run of games. He's got obvious quality. I think my only worry is that I think it's quite evident that he doesn't want to be here anymore. I don't think that means he'll put in the effort, and I think that means Chelsea are basically playing with 10 men. Whereas if you look at the Brighton game last season when he was playing, it was very much a case of, well, he was coming in to prove a point. He'd been out injured all season. He came and he stepped up. Every opportunity he had at the beginning of this season and the last season, he was stepping up because there was a pathway. There was an opportunity for him to potentially go in and play in the first choice 11. And that just hasn't come to fruition. And I do worry that with that mindset that we've had throughout the season, where it's great, we've got this first choice, we've got the second choice, isn't that a great 11 sort of situation we've got going on? That has actually come home to roost. And I don't know if Chelsea actually have a strong enough 11 this weekend. I'm not particularly confident, I'll be very honest. I think that Chelsea's options at the top end of the pitch are limited. I think we knew that going into January, the fact that it wasn't addressed and Chelsea could potentially be really struggling now. And it's almost like the FA Cup will be, I feel like it's almost like in this situation, the FA Cup isn't being viewed as the FA Cup, it's being viewed as just, you know, it's just a little trophy not to worry about. Focus on the Conference League, focus on getting top four. I'm like, Chelsea needs silverware. They need to set a benchmark. Mm-hmm. And as much as the Conference League may be Chelsea's best opportunity to do that right now, I do think the FA Cup is also a great opportunity to do it as well. And considering how far I went in the competition last season with the squad that we had, this squad is essentially stronger on paper, you could argue. You know, they've proven that in terms of track record in the league. So realistically, the benchmark should be to go further. And I do worry that Chelsea are not taking it as serious as they could be. And I don't think they're taking this top four challenge or the FA Cup or the Conference League as serious as they could be, because the strength that we have in depth is very, very limited. And this is a game where it's come to prove it, considering that Dan and I literally had to name an 11 and go, oh, well, midfield, you can't really do much. Left back, we're struggling. Up front, we don't really have anything. This is just another example of Chelsea failing in the transfer market to address serious issues and just pushing it again to the summer, which kind of brings it all nicely full circle. But I mean, that is the Echo 11. So I'll go for it for you. Philip Jorgensen in goal, left back Malo Gusto, two centre backs, Trevor Chalobah and Tosin Adebayo. Right back, we have Josh Atchimpong. Your midfield pivot is Enzo and Moises Caicedo. Cole Palmer will be playing in the 10. Tyreek George on the left. Pedro Neto on the right. And Christopher Nkunku up front. Dan, are you happy with that?
As happy as you can be. I pretty much echo most of what you said there in terms of confidence level. But I think the best thing is maybe style, right? Style of Brighton is that they, not only in terms of them playing a very progressive game, we know they are not a low block team. Mm. And I think they will offer us space, and they do at times play stupid ball, which I think maybe helps Chelsea. So the quality is there to win games. And I think that, as we said the other day in our voice note reviews, I think I said it and others did as well, the season is not unsalvageable. My worry is that the squad is just not good enough to maintain or withhold what could come, which I think is the big issue and major headache, I think, for Enzo Maresca for the rest of this campaign, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. We'll have to see what happens. But of course, we will be back after the Brighton game with a voice note review. And of course, the score will be live on Twitter Spaces with the final score. So make sure you head across and get involved in that conversation. But I have been Louis. That has been Dan. This has been the Chelsea Echo. If you're brand new around here and watching, if that has worked, please say it's worked. Please make sure you hit the subscribe button down below and drop a like on this video and hit the notification bell as well. If you have been listening to the Chelsea Echo, please make sure you give us a 5-star review on all good audio platforms where you find your podcast. It really helps us out, and it would really be a benefit to anyone listening to get involved with the show. But guys, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you later.